Hi, everybody. My name is Scott Benson. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, God!
And it is truly by the grace of God and the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship that I've been sober since May 23rd, 1989. I would like to thank Wayne and the Northern Hills Recovery Group for asking me to come and participate in your anniversary. Happy birthday. It's a double pleasure because I'm getting to spend the weekend with my sponsor Dick and his wife Peg, and so I'm very appreciative of that. Sorry I couldn't be at the workshop that Dick and Peg gave on the traditions earlier. I have heard their talk on that before many times, and I'm sure they told you the secret of a good relationship is that you need to marry Peg. I'll share a little bit about what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And it's been kind of a busy day. I started out of my mother's house in Minot, and one of my uncles passed on, and went to the funeral. It was a good funeral, and he's in a better place. And then I drove down here. I listened to three AA CDs and a little Metallica, lots of coffee, and in my fruit basket in the room there was also a pack of Camels. So. I guess they want me upbeat. As you can tell, I'm kind of a, I've never taken a legal drink of alcohol, and so I'm kind of a desperate alcoholic. When I say that, I mean there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I suppose, that you could call functioning alcoholics, and I'm not one of those. When I was drinking, I was drinking. I had a difficult time doing anything else. But I grew up in what you'd call an alcoholic home. I say that because both my mother and I are alcoholics, so hence. It was kind of chaotic. You know, you never knew what was going to happen, and which fits in well to my personality because it was kind of nice not knowing what was going to happen. We moved a little bit, And as far back as I can remember, I always felt like there was something wrong with me. Nobody ever said that, but I always kind of felt like there was something wrong with me, and it always kind of seemed like Scott against the world, and I lost my train of thought. Well, I'm drinking, so let's jump to drinking. I did drink, and I enjoyed drinking. I was kind of a quiet, introverted person who spent a lot of time analyzing myself and trying to figure out ways to fit in. And I joined a lot of different activities, and it always seemed like I was just apart from things, and when I had the first time I drank, that I got drunk, it didn't go real well, but nevertheless, I remember I moved to a new town, which wasn't new because we moved a lot, and I discovered after intense counseling that those were unplanned moves, but I didn't know at the time. We just moved, you know. Apparently my mother would do something to embarrass herself with her drinking and we'd move to the next town. I didn't know that then, but anyway, I was at this new town and some people asked me if I wanted to do some drinking and I went to this party I'd been, you know, exposed to drinking, but I'd never really gotten drunk, and I started drinking and some amazing things happened. Although I wasn't overly conscious of them at the time, but all of a sudden, you know, I felt comfortable. It was like, whew, Once I started drinking, I felt like I was where I was supposed to be, when I was supposed to be there. You know, I can remember feeling comfortable sliding across the coffee table. I can remember being in the bathroom and looking into the mirror. And I'd never felt attractive my entire life, but I can remember looking in the mirror that night and being impressed with how good I looked, and which was a new feeling. I can also remember at the end of the night, which wouldn't be the first nor the last time, but at the end of the night I was crying on the back porch that nobody loved me. And not exactly what I was looking for when I was out to be cool, but I engaged in my first drinking and driving incident by pedaling my bicycle home. And I passed out on the couch, although I wouldn't have called it that. It should have been an omen. We happened to be living at a place that there was a big Bud Man painted on the wall, but long story. I got up and I woke up, and I'm looking back at this in hindsight, but I got up and I had the obsession that alcoholics have is that somehow, someday, I was going to control and enjoy my drinking. And that's not what went through my mind. What went through my mind was I was going to do that again without the crying part because that wasn't very cool. Apparently I drank too much that induced tears, and then that wasn't going to repeat itself. And my life kind of shifted from then. Where I spent a lot of time looking for opportunities to drink, and it just, my life kind of began to steer towards that. I got a license when I was young, and so that meant I had the ability to get around, and initially it started out as kind of a weekend thing, and I was always amazed because when I was at school, I was always kind of in this shell, and I just couldn't, I was the kind of guy that, I don't know if you're like me, but I have when I'm sober, I kind of have the bleeds, or I have this racy mind where all sorts of things go through my mind. I can walk into a room, and if two people are talking, I instantly assume they're talking about me, and it's not good because I know deep down in my belly button I'm not a good person. And I have the ability, just my mind races, I have the ability to interpret what I think your looks are. I have the ability to know if you're judging me or not, and this makes for, you know, some uncomfortness. You know, I've talked about my convenience store analogy, but I take everything I see and hear personal, and so when I walk into a convenience store and the clerk is overly friendly and seems to go out of her way to be kind and talks to me a little bit more than what I would think appropriate, and so forth. I leave the convenience store thinking she digs me. It doesn't, not once does it occur to me, maybe she's just having a good day or maybe she's being polite. I have the sneaking suspicion many alcoholics nice women have been stalked because of being overly friendly by alcoholics, by being kind, but at the same token, I have the ability to go into a convenience store, and if the clerk is rude and seems a little short, I take that personal too, and I vow never to go to 7-Eleven again. And these aren't good, I suppose, principles for governing one's life, but that's kind of how it was. I've heard it said in AA, but I always thought that people were out to get the best of me, so when people were kind to me, I always thought there was a catch. But I enjoyed drinking. I enjoyed everything about parties. I lived for it. It just brought me alive. I was always baffled by why I always thought drinking brought out the real Scott. Because when I was going to school and stuff, it was like I was scared to talk to girls because they might say something like, "Are you talking to me?" when I was drinking, it just became, you know, I was, the nice thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is you get, honesty becomes a part of your life. And I remember I would drink and I would fantasize about being a rock star. And after I got sober, you know, I, I mentioned this to my sponsor, and he cleared that up. He says, you got to be able to sing, Scott. But my point was is that I couldn't understand why I was like in the shell, but when I drank it, I just came out. You know, I seemed to be able to have the beat. You know, I'm the kid who was, when I was in band, I was a drummer, but I wasn't, when we marched in parades, I wasn't allowed to actually hit the drum. I had to just act like it because I just couldn't keep the beat. But when I drank, I felt the beat. And I felt the beat to my bones. But the older I got, the more I drank. I started working so I could drink, so I had drinking money. And I don't know why, but it everything I did drinking, I always felt like I did it better. And I can remember the way I lived just became normal, but I can remember telling people that I drove better drunk. I can remember I just thought I did everything better. And I can remember one time when I was drinking and I was living at home, and my mother told me that if I drove drunk again, she would sell my car. And I can remember after a long night, I'd woken up in a trailer park laundromat, I went home and I didn't know where my car was, but there was a tow wrecker receipt and $25 on the table. My mother had my car towed. But anyways, I got in trouble right away when I was drinking. Karen G from California talks about it, but when I was drinking and I would get in trouble, I would do one thing more to make it worse. I was thinking on the way down here with, 400 miles of drive time, I was thinking of all the places I went drinking and all the places I've went sober, and since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I must say the places I've went sober are far better. I went to the state hospital twice. I went to Heartview, which is a treatment center in North Dakota, twice. I went to the Human Service Center treatment center twice. I went to the psych ward in Bismarck once. I went to the psych ward in Minot once. People really misunderstand alcoholics. But when I started drinking, I never knew what was going to happen. And initially, I wasn't looking to control my drinking. Initially, I drank to drink. I didn't think about how much I was consuming. I didn't think about any of those things because I drank to get drunk. I thought that's why people drank. And as I started getting trouble with it, and I would go through a treatment center and they would pile on heaps of evidence as to why I shouldn't drink, and I would leave treatment and I would kind of have somewhat of a desire to stop drinking. But when the pain of living would get too great, I would find myself choosing to drink even though I had evidence as to why I shouldn't drink, because I have this mind that tells me it's okay. You know, I can remember how my mind works. I can remember one time coming out of a blackout. I was driving a car. I sit next to someone. I had no idea who this guy was. No idea. I didn't know his first name other than he was probably an alcoholic like me, because I deducted his wife was pregnant giving birth at the hospital, yet he's with me as a complete stranger. And that wasn't so bad, except I had a car full of boat equipment. I don't own a boat. It's apparent he doesn't own a boat or a boat dealership. It would have been nice, but that wasn't the case. And that night in Bismarck, someone inherited a lawn full of boat equipment. And I didn't think, gee, Scott, I got a problem with my drinking. I really need to cut down. I thought, I am never, ever drinking Mad Dog 2020 again, if that's what it does. And later on, and like I said, I was always kind of popping in and out of treatment centers, and one of the good things, my mother had been kind of in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, but one of the good things I think about that is that I got here sooner because I knew from her experience that when you got in trouble with the law, for drinking and you went to treatment, they were easier on you. But most treatment centers, as you know, send you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I kept getting sent to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always, being young, I always had this, you know, I would, when I was kind of drifting in and out of meetings, I would go to meetings for a while and I would think, you know, I didn't identify with alcoholics. I thought, you know, I'm too young. I thought I need a level of excitement that Alcoholics Anonymous is not going to produce. I can remember being in a meeting on a Friday night, and I hadn't been sober very long, and I was kind of in a daze, and I was thinking, you know, what do you guys do around here for fun? And I said, well, we're going to have the meeting, and some of us might, you know, play a little pinochle, and then we'll go out for coffee and talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm thinking, you know, last Friday night, I drank. Oh, yeah, I got a little drunk. Me and a buddy borrowed a car. They call it stealing, but we borrowed a car. We drove it so hard, we literally burned the wheels off of it and abandoned it in someone's yard. That is not going to be replaced by a meeting and some coffee. But, you know, the pain of drinking caught up to me, and I drank too much coffee today, I can tell. The last 6 months of my drinking, I had a difficult time holding jobs, but I happened to be working at this restaurant, and I was a prep cook, and I'd moved to dishes. Apparently they didn't like me yelling at the waitresses, and I can remember at this point I was trying not to get drunk when I drank. I deducted that my real problem was drinking in public, and if I drank at home that I wouldn't get in trouble. And I'd even tried the grain belt beer experiment, which is I thought that if I drank grain belt beer, the stuff is so nasty you can't possibly get drunk drinking it. Wrong. You can get arrested drinking it. Matter of fact, you can wake up in a wheat field drinking it, actually. But when I started from my bedroom. But I would go to work and I would be late and I would be thinking, you know, I didn't ever have any big goals, you know, but I wanted some things in my life. I wanted to feel good. I wanted to have some friends. I wanted to, you know, feel decent about myself. And even though I've always wanted people to judge me by my intentions, you know, and I'm offended when they judge me by my actions. I like, you know, I meant to be there and I meant to do this, and, you know, I didn't mean to yell at you, and I didn't, I knew I had a problem with drinking, but I didn't really know, I didn't think AA could fix me, and I was working at this restaurant, and I would be telling myself, you know, I would get to work and I would be late, and I would drive my car, and I'd all these things would be going through my mind. You know, you did it again, you weren't going to drink, today I'm not going to drink, and I would go to work, and I would think about this boss who didn't appreciate me, the dishwasher telling him how to run his cafe, and I would think about how this waitress I wanted to ask out wouldn't go out with me. You know, a lot of people looked at me like a loser. I could just see it, but I started to feel like a loser. And I knew she wouldn't go out with me, and I would be telling myself, I'm not going to drink today. Today I'm not going to drink. And I would get off work, and something would happen between when I would start out the day with the remorse that I wasn't going to drink, and I would wind up drinking. And at this point, I would drink warm beer at home by myself because I got in the habit of getting DUIs and stuff when I was in public. And I would start drinking, and it would do for me what it always did. I mean, all of a sudden my life would kind of clear up and answers would start to come, and I would start to drink and I would start to think about my job and how I was being held back and how he mistreated me, and I'd probably quit and maybe even start a restaurant, Scotty's Drive-In, run him out of business. And I would think about that gal who probably, that I never asked out, but I knew she'd say no. I'd show her too, because I'd show up someday in my Mercedes and not give her a ride. And I could see myself on the beach surfing with blonde hair and women flocking. And I would kind of, and then I would wake up and I would be late for work, and you know, the cycle would go on, and I would go to work and I'd be feeling crappy and I'd be late and I'd be, and it, eventually I drank outside of that house again and got another DUI and wound up in treatment one more time and got out of treatment, and I knew I probably shouldn't drink. They'd sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous again, and I showed up, and I didn't want to be there, but I was kind of funny how Alcoholics Anonymous works, but I was pending trial for a DUI, and so I had a little incentive to stay sober, and I went to a meeting, and I'd been there before. It was at the clubhouse in Minot, and I was, I'm a little... I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with a big chip on my shoulder, but to give you a little bit scenario what I was like, I used to have long red hair. That's why people stared at me awkwardly, because they didn't know what they were looking at, but I had long red hair that was unkempt. I had strategically ripped blue jeans, and I would wear moccasins up to my knees. I think if you're a small person like me, I always had this complex that if you thought you would respect me if you were scared of me or something. I don't know, but I've seen one too many mobster movies or something. But anyway, and so I wasn't the most approachable person. And I was at this meeting, and one thing that was unique about it is that five guys came in. They all came in together. They're all clean cut. They're all smiling. They're shaking people's hands. One of them, or a couple of them, came up to me and welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it happened to be, in those days, for the open meeting, they would invite another group in to speak at different groups, kind of like they did in at treatment centers. A group would come in, and three or four or five people would kind of do a call-up meeting. And these guys shared, and it was different because the message that I heard from them was that their lives were getting better because of Alcoholics Anonymous. They were younger. They seemed to be fired up. That didn't really impress me as much, because I didn't like people that had blonde hair and blue eyes, because I know deep down in my belly button their lives are easier than mine with red hair. I don't know if you can understand that, but I have to work doubly hard to get to the same place as blonde haired people. Anyway, they all were, I thought they were all, I would have called them wing nuts at the time, Air Force. I thought they were, but anyway, one of them got my phone number, and which I think, you know, I'm very grateful that he had the same, I suppose, principle of as Bill W. finding Dr. Bob. Bill didn't wait for Bob to call, and Scott, my sponsor, didn't wait for me to call him. He got my phone number, and he started calling me, and he called me, and he asked me if I wanted to go to Perkins. And what was amazing is I had held off on drinking as long as I could, and my cousin finally said, "You want to go do something?" And I said yes, and I wound up drinking. The next day, I was on my way out to drink again. The whole cycle was going to start all over again, like it had every time. But this guy Scott calls me and he says, "Hey, do you want to go to coffee at Perkins?" And for whatever reason, I said yes. And we went to coffee at Perkins, and I had a lot of things going through my mind, obviously, and he started sharing his story. He talked about showing up to Alcoholics Anonymous with a beat-up motorcycle and a box of clothes, and I was amazed at that, because he was, when I met him, he was a cigarette salesman. You know, he wore suits, he was clean-cut, and I remember thinking at different times, you know, if I had the things he had, I'd go to AA, too. People liked him. You know, I can remember he was, I would have called it flirting with the waitress, but I remember I thought he was trying to impress me with flirting with the waitress, but what I learned about him was that he was friendly to everybody he ran across. I just thought he was flirting and trying to impress me with what a playboy was, but he kind of drugged me around, and it's kind of funny how Alcoholics Anonymous, I think, runs in circles. One of the guys he was running around with was a guy in the Air Force that had come from Bellevue, Nebraska, by the name of Russ. And I don't know what happened to Russ, but Scott, my sponsor, had agreed to go out to the Air Base and do a book study with him on Monday nights. And so what happened is Scott started picking me up and taking me to meetings, and I identified with him as an alcoholic. He didn't talk so much about the consequences of drinking, because I think they vary by people. If if you're from a small town, for example, and you your buddies with the local cop, you're probably not going to have too many DUIs, or if you're from a larger city. But I think the consequences of drinking in general vary. But why he drank and what happened to him when he drank was identical to me. And what happened to me when I drank is that I had another. And once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And that the way I felt sober, people used to always tell me, if you just wouldn't drink, you'd be okay. And I knew that wasn't true, because I had just not drank, and I would go crazy. My mind would start racing, and I would, like our book talks about, I'd have increasing feelings of being restless, irritable, and discontent. And I felt better when I was around him, and so he just kept calling me, and I kept going, and he started to sell me on Alcoholics Anonymous slowly. I asked him to be my sponsor, which was a tough thing. It was worse than asking a girl out, because I was scared. I was really scared he was going to say, I'm sponsoring all these other guys, and you're too sick for me to help. I don't know why I thought that, but I just thought I was sicker than most. And he got me involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the, when I introduced myself, I think there's some things that I found very helpful, and he introduced me to them. One was a home group. About that time, his sponsor had given him, he'd gotten sober in the Fargo-Moorhead area, and his sponsor said, stop coming down here. You need to stay in Minot and work with alcoholics up there. And I happened to be the batch of alcoholics he was working with, or one of them. And about that time, he started a meeting. And I don't know if you're new, or if you're, if you're sponsored and your sponsor gets a whim to start a meeting, you're about to get real busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started feeling better was the first thing. And I'm one of these people to jump back a little bit. I was sober about 5 months and drank and never told anybody. It took a 1 year chip, and then later got honest about it. And so in the midst of all this, I had a hard time transitioning, between being sober and in the drinking life. I was going to meetings, I was going to lots of meetings, but I was still, even though I was underage, I was still going to the bars for vicarious pleasure, and I'd gotten hooked up with him, and he was sponsoring me. And I was, the story was, when I got sober, was don't drink, go to a regular meeting, don't miss it unless you're dead, and get a sponsor. I didn't know, I think they should give a handbook on what people really mean when they say things in Alcoholics Anonymous. What he really meant was get a home group, you're going to go through the steps with me, we're going to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're going to do a lot of things, and your life's going to change, and if you'll stand out of the way, you can become a better man and stay sober in the process. But I had gotten this idea that he'd helped me get a job at a restaurant, and which I thought I'd been blackballed from all of them, because it felt like I'd worked with all of them. And I guess I did get sober. But I got this idea that I was going to become wealthy selling rainbow vacuum cleaners against his. If your sponsor tells you directly not to do something and you do it, it's been my experience, it never works out. But I had blown off my home group to pitch of Rainbow back, and I was supposed to go to a roundup over the weekend, which I bailed on. I was with my family. How safe could that be? I'd bailed on two AA commitments, and I found myself drinking while all the rest of the guys were gone. And I felt terrible about it because I wanted to be in Alcoholics Anonymous more than I wanted to continue. It just proved to me that I needed to do more. I never said anything. Later he told me he knew I had drank, but I took a one-year chip and then later fessed up about it. But anyway, so I'm busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor convinced me that I could probably go to college, which I didn't think I was smart enough to do when I started. I'm an alcoholic. My life did not get perfect when I got sober. It has continually gotten better, but there's been ups and downs. But I started college, and I was one of these guys that I was active in AA. I'd be at noon meeting skipping class, and I was always very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. Always went to a lot of meetings. He always impressed upon me the importance of carrying the message to other alcoholics. And so I was doing this, and I was working, and I was going to college. And like a good alcoholic, he told me, for the first 2 years, just take generals, because that'll give you a good realm of the different classes they have at college, and then decide what you want to do. No, I don't do that. I go in, I'm going to be a marketing major. Second quarter, I'm going to be an English major. Third quarter, I'm going to be, I've got a D in literary criticism, and so I'm back to business. Anyway, 4 years later, ultimately, I wound up getting a degree in economics with a minor in criminal justice. Oh, I forgot I was going to major in criminal justice, too. With a minor in criminal justice, I must tell you only, I got a 4.0 in the criminal justice stuff and squeaked by on economics, so I'm better off. If you have any questions about the criminal mind, I'm probably a little bit more educated there. But anyway, I just stayed active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sponsor moved away, and that kind of scared me, and I'd gotten another sponsor, I've moved in sobriety a few times. I wound up I wanted to be an officer in the military, and I went into the National Guard first. My sponsor said, why don't you do the part-time military thing before you jump into it full-fledged, since you change your mind a lot? And so I did that, and I was, believe it or not, after I went through, I was enlisted in the Guard, and then I wanted to be an officer, and I went through officer candidate school. The U.S. government wouldn't let me be commissioned as a second lieutenant because of I couldn't get a waiver for criminal convictions or criminal for DUIs. I guess they don't want officers that have DUIs. But and I was I it it 4 years I was thinking, you know, this AA here, I've been active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've done a lot of things, and I thought, for some reason, I thought, since I've been active in Alcoholics Anonymous, everything should go my way as I see it all the time. But what happened was, what turned out to be what I thought was a bad deal, I wound up getting this job, which ultimately took me down to Jamestown, and I wound up living in Jamestown, North Dakota, and a couple of us got together and started a meeting, and I was there for about 3 years, and I kind of have this three-year wiggle. 3 years later, I wound up moving to Spokane, and about this time in that process, I'd gotten Dick as a sponsor, and he was helping me out. One of the things I'd covered with him is I wanted to have a relationship with someone more than a month, and I'm hard to get along with, so... I wound up meeting my wife in Spokane, and I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. Funny thing is, I was kind of spoiled when I was in North Dakota at that time, because I sponsored a number of people, and I was kind of treated special, and I went to Spokane, and I was just another guy in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they didn't really care how we did things in North Dakota, but I tried to help them the best I could. No, I was there for 3 years, and I had an opportunity to move back to North Dakota, which is, you know, it's funny how when you get sober, and there's a lot of people you get to know. My mother got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous shortly after I did, and watching, you know, our book talks about a fellowship growing up about you. I should mention, you know, one of the foundations for me is my home group, which there's 13 people from my home group here tonight. The Buffalo City group meets 7:30 in Jamestown, North Dakota on a Monday night if you're ever there. And I lost my train of thought again. Oh, anyway, so I got married, and I always thought I was a real giver until I got married. And my, it's very apparent how selfish I still am. You know, I've discovered the consequence for not being, for me, I'm the type of alcoholic that I require lots of meetings. I require, I need to be out of myself a lot. I need to be of service to other people, because if I'm not, the punishment is the gradual return of self. And I don't really want that. I like feeling free. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of things have changed in my life. I think it's a process. I had an opportunity to come back to North Dakota, and I guess I've been here now coming on 3 years. I don't seem to have the same moving twitch, so I think I'm permanent in Jamestown. And the beautiful thing is I remember thinking I would never be in Jamestown, North Dakota, unless it was at the state hospital. And it's nice to kind of be a resident among the city. Jumping ahead, so now I'm back in Jamestown, and what's happening today is I'm married. We have a total of 5 kids. I'm not as fertile as it sounds, but total of 5 kids, I don't think I would be capable of having a partnership with someone, or capable of being a father if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I didn't have any relationships with anybody when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. The only one who wrote me when I was in jail in treatment was Mom. She never gave up on me. Because of AA, I've been really blessed with a lot of wonderful people in my life, and things are always changing. You know, today I'm self-employed, which is kind of scary, but it'll be a new adventure. My wife and I were off of my sponsor's suggestion, we go off on a date night, and one of the things we embarked on was gymnastics, and adult gymnastics. But after I hurt my neck, that's out. We'll have to settle for the movies again. I'm not as young as I used to be. But, we've been, Jamestown, you know, has been a good experience. You know, we've had, in one of the businesses I've been involved with, we've been slowly recruiting senior members of Alcoholics Anonymous there, and the group is growing and getting back bigger, and the fellowship is getting stronger, and it's wonderful to see, you know, wonderful to see things change. I think the biggest thing that if you're new, you know, I came here and I was pretty hopeless. You know, I thought Alcoholics Anonymous worked for smart people, and I thought it worked for good people, and I'm not in any of those two categories, but because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to stay sober, and my life has slowly gotten better, where most of the time when I put my head on the pillow at night, I feel like I've been a contributor instead of a taker. And prior to AA, I'd taken everything I could possibly take, I think it's because of you I'm blessed. Thank you.
hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.